Radio Prague News.
The Czech Prime Minister has said that now was not a good time for the country to adopt the euro. A postal workers' union has announced that it will join the nationwide transport strike to take place on Thursday, and the Prague Public Transport Corporation has rejected Mr. Klaus's proposal of how to deal with Thursday's strike, labeling it unrealistic. In an interview for the newspaper Financial Times, Czech Prime Minister Petr Nečas said that now was not a good time for the Czech Republic to adopt the euro. Among the reasons he cited were the uncertain future of the currency and the fact that 3 of the 17 eurozone countries have had to apply for financial aid from the European Union. However, all 12 countries that became EU members in 2004, the Czech Republic among them, are obligated to eventually adopt the Union's common currency. Among the newer member states, Romania seems the most likely candidate for timely euro adoption by 2015. In Poland, the original euro adoption deadline of 2012 will not be met. It appears likely that the country may not adopt the euro until the end of this decade. An independent postal workers' union, the SOS21, announced on Monday that their members will be joining the transport workers' strike on Thursday. SOS21 members are employees of the Postal Service's logistics department. Previously, only the transport department unions of the Czech Postal Service had planned to join the nationwide strike. The biggest union within the Czech Postal Service, which counts some 15,000 members, will not be participating, although its chairman said that his union agreed with the organizers. With 36,000 employees, the Czech Postal Service is the nation's biggest employer. On Monday, Petr Blažek, the head of the transport department of the Prague Public Transit Corporation, reacted to the president's proposal to substitute private buses for public transportation on Thursday, when a transport strike will hit the capital. He said that the corporation had already considered this, however, private bus companies did not have the capacity to make up for the standstill of public transportation. He added that this solution was not realistic and that private companies would never have the resources to replace public transportation, especially during peak hours. The mayor of Prague, Bohuslav Svoboda, has not yet reacted to President Václav Klaus's statement. And now let's take a brief look at the weather. Cloudy skies but some sunny periods are expected on Monday. Daytime temperatures should reach highs of around 22 degrees Celsius. My name is Sarah Barufka, and this brings us to the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Today, the threat of a nationwide transport strike has been averted, but only for a few more days. We'll have the latest in the news from Czech sports, and later on in the program, we meet Karel Och, the young new artistic director of the Karlovy Vary Film Festival.
It did change a little bit. It's a little less Woodstockian as opposed to 1990s, but it's this flair is still there.
I hope you'll be staying with us today for all that here on Radio Prague. A nationwide transport strike planned for Monday was averted when a Prague court ruled that the trade unions had not announced the protest sufficiently ahead of time. The transport unions, which are opposing government reforms, have now rescheduled the strike for Thursday, June 16th. While they have lifted an unpopular call to block roads and highways, Thursday's strike will be even longer than originally planned, from midnight to midnight, and may extend to other professions, such as teachers and businessmen. Earlier today, I talked about the situation with political analyst Jiří Pehe. I asked him if the court decision was indeed a biased political move, as the unions have charged.
Well, I think that the court's decision needs to be seen on two levels. It seems, on the one hand, that the court didn't really rule on the issue itself, because the kind of strike that the trade unions declared doesn't need to be announced 3 days in advance, and this is the core of the court ruling. But on the other hand, it is a court ruling, and the Czech Republic, as a law-abiding country, needs to respect such a ruling. And I think it was wise on part of the trade unions to simply say, okay, we don't agree with this. And on top of that, we think this decision is at least partly political. But we will abide by the ruling, and we will simply postpone our strike.
Why exactly would their strike not have to be declared at least three working days ahead of time?
Well, because this concerns only those strikes which stem from collective negotiations. If there is a failure in negotiations between employers and trade unions, then a strike needs to be declared at least 3 days in advance. This is a public protest, and as such, it seems it wouldn't have to be declared 3 days in advance. On the other hand, I think that this is a very thin line to walk, and therefore it was wise on part of the unions not to challenge this and simply say, okay, the strike will not be held on Monday, it will be held on Thursday.
Well, both sides, both the government and the unions, have insinuated that the other is unwilling to negotiate. Do you see some way out of this?
Well, I think that the way out of this is simple. The government should simply say, yes, our opinion is that we have negotiated, but if the trade unions think that we have not negotiated enough, why don't we just sit down and go over government reforms and over the proposals by trade unions, because trade unions have their own proposals, their alternatives. And that would probably diffuse some of the tension. And moreover, it would also, in my opinion, make the claims by the unions for future strikes less plausible. But the government simply maintains that it has done enough. And unfortunately for the government, it doesn't seem to be the case as far as the public opinion is concerned. It seems that the public is on the side of trade unions, and it believes that the government is really not discussing its reforms, and it's not really conciliatory enough.
That was political analyst Professor Jiří Pehe. This is Radio Prague. Now, as always of a Monday, we've a rundown of the week in Czech sports news, compiled for you on this occasion by Jan Wellinger. And we begin with football first. The Czech Republic's football team got off to a winning start at the European Under-21 Championships in Denmark, downing opponent Ukraine on Sunday by a score of 2-1. Both Czech goals came from midfielder and team captain Botek Dočkal early in the second half to give the Czechs the advantage. Ukraine came back late in the game with a goal from substitute Bielý, who shot past Vaclík in the 88th minute. But the Czech Republic was able to hold on for the remainder of the game for the win and leads Group B after Spain and England tied. The Czechs will face Spain on Wednesday and England on Sunday. The two teams to finish at the top of the group will advance to the elimination round. One interesting item from the game noted by the Czech press was that Dočkal had a bet with his father that he would score two, with the promise kept his father reportedly now has to quit smoking cigars. In motorcycle racing, Czech MotoGP rookie Karel Abraham finished seventh in the British Grand Prix, a day after posting his best ever qualifying performance in his career. Despite getting off to a poor start and being passed by five riders, the racer was able to come back, tying for his best finish earlier this year in Spain. Abraham, who races for Cardion AB Motor Racing, is in 10th spot in the overall MotoGP standings. The Czech Republic's men's handball team has successfully completed qualification for next year's European Championship in Serbia. In the final match, the team beat the Netherlands 38-26. Despite some flaws in play, members, some of whom notched up some 65 games over the season, were happy with the result. Key in the win was a surge in the first half when the team jumped to a difficult-to-assail 11-1 lead. The Czech team's Slovak coach Martin Liptak is now hoping for a favorable group draw in the finals, confident that with a little luck next year, the Czech squad could do well.
Professional mountain biker Milan Spieszny, who races for ASNH Superior MTB, clinched his first cross-country race title of the season at the weekend in front of a home crowd in the Buzang area. The race was run at the Homolka Forest Park. The 34-year-old beat favorite Skarnitzel for top spot. Next week, the rider will compete in Podsnieżko in the Czech Republic before heading to the United States and Canada for two World Cup events. That's a sport for today.
Many thanks to Jan Wellinger. If you're just tuning in, then thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Christian Falvey. The Karlovy Vary International Film Festival, which starts in the pretty West Bohemian spa town on July 1st, is one of the biggest cultural events in the Czech Republic. And one of the biggest positions at the festival has now a new occupant, with Karel Och named artistic director, despite still being in his 30s. He is Ian Willoughby's guest in this week's edition of One on One.
When the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival gets underway in a couple of weeks, it'll offer viewers hundreds of movies across three competition categories, retrospectives, and a host of other sections. The man ultimately responsible for the selection of all of those films is Karel Och, who, at only 37 years of age, will this year serve as Karlovy Vary's artistic director for the first time. When we spoke recently at the festival's offices in central Prague, I asked Karel Och how he had become interested in movies in the first place.
It just happened, sort of, in a way, and I started to go to a local cinema in my hometown, which is a small town about 100 kilometers outside of Prague. I became friends with the owners or with the people who worked there, and later on I helped him to change the light bulbs and try to influence the programming of films, and I just somehow became part of it, and I liked the smell of cinema, and at some point when I was 18 I sort of thought, why not try to study it? Or, and there's a famous Czech historian, film historian, Karel Translavský, and I met him at some point when I was about 20 years old and or 18 years old, and I asked him, what should I do to have your job? And he said, well, I'm an autodidact, I've never studied before, but you should try the film studies at the Prague Charles University. And so I later on, and a few years after that, I was lucky to be accepted, and that's where it all started.
When did you first go to the Karlovy Vary Festival as a viewer, and what was your experience then?
Actually, I'm ashamed to admit that I've never been there as a viewer. I only went there for the first time when I was hired as a jury secretary. So since then, I was sort of catching up on what is it like to be a spectator, and I'm trying to use as many occasions as possible to meet with spectators and to spend time with them to get the vibrations from the audience and everything. But I actually missed the experience before I started to work at the festival.
What was the first year that you worked there, and how do you think it's changed since that time?
It is exactly 10 years ago. I started in 2001 as a jury secretary, and it was just a job which was for the actual festival, so I was not involved in the preparation of that festival in the spring. And yes, well, it changed a lot. Obviously, it goes together with the changes in the world of film festival in general, and the industry aspect of a film festival in general is stronger and stronger. So this obviously goes also for Karlovy Vary Film Festival. I think 2001 was sort of a year between the wonderful 1990s, which is sort of golden age of Karlovy Vary, and when the 20 years old colleagues or friends, they would go to Karlovy Vary to see films which until today they remember. They are now in my age, and they still coming to Karlovy Vary, but they don't sleep in the tent anymore. They sleep in hotels, but they have the same passion. So it did change a little bit. It's a little less Woodstockian as opposed to 1990s, but it's this flair is still there, and you can see it from the immediate reactions of the audience that there is something strong still.
You, I know, go to a lot of film festivals. How would you compare Karlovy Vary to other festivals around Europe or even around the world?
Well, again, I guess the audience response is something which makes Carlo Vivari rather particular and special. People might not know it, but there are many festivals in the world which are not as easy to and accessible for a regular audience as Carlo Vivari, and which is something we really try to put emphasis on, that anybody can see anything if possible, so that we try to repeat as many times as possible. So I believe it's the fact that the regular spectator has a lot of chances to see good films, to meet interesting people, and I guess also it's the festival trailers. Especially in the last few years, that's what makes our festival very special.
And you, in recent years, have had stars from the previous years appearing in the trailers.
Exactly, which we are really happy about that, because it confirms that despite the fact that it's not easy to bring a star to Karlovy, once we get him there, he becomes a friend of the festival. And that's why John Malkovich appeared in a trailer a year after he came, and that's why Jude Law agreed to play in a trailer which will be released during this year's festival.
For many years you've been involved in programming the festival. What is the secret of programming a film festival? How do you do it?
Well, there is no secret in it. We are a group of people who start watching films about 10 months before the festival, going to several film festivals, trying to see what's new, what are the new hot directors to follow, and at the same time we try to put together interesting tributes and retrospectives which would sort of help creating this wonderful atmosphere during the festival with the help of older films. Basically we get to see hundreds of films, and during this viewing procedure we get starting to get an idea what the actual festival could be. And so there's no idea before starting to watching films what the festival should be about in terms of topics, etc. It comes during the procedure.
Do you have debates among yourselves about the films, or are there some films that will only have been seen by one programmer?
No, we definitely do not that this way. We try to see films in as many as possible. Basically, the official selection gets to be watched by all four sort of all year round members of the programming team, and obviously we have a group of pre-screeners who help us to go through the submissions, which are now almost 2,000. But not a single film gets to be seen only by one person.
This year you are now for the first time artistic director, and you are following the great Dr. Eva Zaharalova, who did a lot to kind of revive Carlo Vivari in the mid to late 1990s. She has big shoes. Are you daunted filling those shoes?
Well, for me, the biggest challenge at this time, given the fact that I took over only about 5 or 6 months ago, is to bring the 46th Carlo Vivari Film Festival safely to the port in July, and with the help of my colleagues to have it secured. I mean, there are a few things which I will try to change a little bit according to my vision, but it's nothing really revolutionary, it's nothing big, and as I see the sense of continuity, it's here, and I feel lucky to have Mrs. Orwa around, because she's continuing as an artistic consultant, so it's much easier for me.
You must have met a lot of great actors and directors over the last 10 years. Have there been any who made a particular impression?
Yes, and I like to recall my conversations with Jim Jarmusch, whom I met in Iceland at the Reykjavik Film Festival last September. The advantage of a smaller festival is that you get to talk to people more than once. You can catch up the day after and actually have a really nice conversation and get to know people. And I was lucky to have such conversation with Jarmusch, who is really amazing and very charismatic and calm person, and who is very knowledgeable about cinema. So that's what I'm grateful to. That's I feel grateful to this job, that I get to see these people. As far as Carlo Vivari is concerned, I like to remember Danny Houston, who came to introduce films by his father, John Houston, about 4 years ago. He stayed for the whole festival. He has become a good friend of the festival. He was very humble when he was talking about the films of his father, and we had a lot of wonderful stories from classic Hollywood to share with, and he was calling his friends from overseas, and he was asking them, "Oh, why don't you come to Carleo? You know, it's a great festival." So, I mean, he's one of our wonderful guests.
What makes a good year at Carlo Vivari? At the end of the festival, I've been going not as long as you, but nearly as long, I think. People say that it was a pretty good year, or quite a good year, or a great year. What makes it a great year?
I guess you can get as many answers, as many people you have in the grand hall of Hotel Thermal, but it's always, I mean, what I like to see is to walk around outside of Thermal and to try to catch the reactions of people, and if there is something like, okay, whatever, in as far as the reaction on film is concerned, I'm a little bit disappointed, because even when a person is angry, or I don't know, is sort of somehow fed up with something and tries to ask himself questions and understand why a certain film was programmed, I think that's very good, and there is a communication between festival and the audience. So I think it's basically it's emotion, strong emotion of any kind is good, and that's what I try to see. Two different festivals, one and let's say both festivals are programming the same films, but at one festival, a person leaves the cinema and says, "Who the hell did program this film?" And from the other festival, the person leaves the cinema after the same film and asks himself, "Well, maybe I didn't understand something, so I should ask and, you know, have a sort of communication with the festival." So.
My final question, Carol, is obviously films come first at the Carlo Vivari International Film Festival, but partying is also a big side of the event. Do you have to kind of pace yourself socially so you can get through all those 10 or 11 nights?
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm a sort of a night owl during the festival, because we have to wake up very early in the morning and we're having meetings every morning, but it's good to go to such places and to talk to people again about what they lived that day, what they seen, how was the reaction, and we could not just go to sleep. I think we just need to relax a little bit after the long days.
That was Karel Och, Artistic Director of the Carlo Vivari International Film Festival, talking there to Ian Willoughby in that edition of One on One. Topping off our show now today is the next edition of our Soundcheck series, where the Czech language meets the language of music, and brought to you on this occasion by Sara Barufka.
Welcome to Soundcheck, our Czech language series in which you can learn Czech phrases and idioms through song lyrics. Today we will learn some expressions that might come in handy for those of us who would like to complain about the current heat wave. The song we will be listening to is called Vedro by the group Tichá Dohoda. The word to listen for is Vedro. Vedro in Czech means heat. You can also say horko. Je vedro or je horko translate to it is hot. Other words include teplo, which is Czech for warm. Teplé počasí means warm weather. From teplo comes the Czech word for temperature, teplota. Vysoké teploty are high temperatures. If someone has a high fever in Czech, you would say má vysokou teplotu. You can also say horečka for fever, as in mám horečku, I have a fever. And if you want to say it's really bloody hot, you can say je vedro jako v pekle. It is hot as hell. Have another listen. Of course, few can stand to be out in the summer heat without working up a sweat. The Czech word for sweating is potit se. Já se hrozně potím means I am sweating terribly. Another way to say you're sweating profusely, though a lot more colloquial, is to say 보김새 약간 or I am sweating like a pig. And if you just want to complain about the heat, you can say 더워 왜더. With that, I leave you to find a place to cool down. Thank you for listening, and 나스클레다노.
Sara Barufka with Soundcheck, wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. Don't forget that this program and every other is available at our internet address, radio.cz. If you have any questions or comments, we are always happy to hear them. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or of course by snail mail to Vinohradska 12 12099 Prague. For me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.